easy answer, and I admit the one that I have been guilty of from time to time, is a kind of black and white thinking that makes you think that taking the spiritual out of practices like yoga and meditation and mindfulness is a Western thing to do. And to some extent, that is true. However, that type of thinking also does not fully grasp the work of Swami Vivekananda, as well as B.K. Iyengar, and others who are working very diligently to bring yoga to audiences in Europe, in the Americas. And I've sat with this. I've taken several classes on yoga, on Buddhism, on histories, both medieval and earlier histories and more modern histories. I've read a lot of books. I have a lot more books to read. Just, I've really sat with this. And the answer that I have kind of come to is that while my personal preference is to incorporate the spiritual into my practice, I also choose to look at it a little differently than a lot of those who are proposing the black and white thinking. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. You're listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast for those looking to rediscover their wild spirit in spite of life's challenges. If you're living with a chronic illness or neurodivergent or consider yourself disabled, and you're looking to connect with your own inner untamed essence, then this show is for you. Your host is Kit Kelsto, Wild Spirit Storyteller. Thanks for listening, and now on to the episode. Hello. I'm Kit Kelsto, your host, and I want to start today by going over a topic that I know you've heard me talk about before, but I feel like it really sets the groundwork for what we're about to discuss, which is regulating your nervous system, using tools to regulate your nervous system as a form of devotion and in conjunction with your spirituality, without necessarily falling into the thinking that you may have about what spirituality is, specifically religion. So I always like to begin these conversations by just reiterating that when I talk about spirituality, I am not talking about organized religion or religious faiths or any sort of belief in a deity or deities or spiritual deity religious system. That's not what I'm talking about. When I talk about spirituality, I follow the dictionary definition that is found in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, m-w.com if you want to look it up, that basically says spirituality is a devotion to something larger than yourself. Full stop. Doesn't define what that is, doesn't state that that has to be within a certain belief system, within a certain religious framework. It's simply a devotion to something larger than yourself. That could be a concept. So in today's conversation, we're talking about tools like yoga and meditation that often had a spiritual or religious component to them, but not necessarily, depending on who's teaching, what school and lineage everything came from. Or they may have been completely removed from that, which is something that's happened a lot as these tools have become studied more diligently for their health benefits. So we see this in mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR, which is taught, I believe, at Brown University. I know I'm on their mailing list. I really want to take some of their classes eventually. We can look at, there is a form of yoga nidra that was specifically developed to help veterans with PTSD. And when we look at that, I know there's also a hospital in Texas. I've heard the gentleman speak that's doing a lot of work with meditation and mindfulness in cancer patients. So when you think about the health benefits that these have, meditation, mindfulness, being present, and the ways that they're studied for pain relief, for relaxation, for sleep, for mental health conditions, then the spirituality is pretty much divorced from them. What I would like to talk to you about today is to bring the spirituality back. And the spirituality back that I'm talking about is a devotion to something larger than yourself. And again, I just want to say it could be a concept. And with that concept, we could think of it as inner peace, relaxation, feeling good, whatever good means to you, being calm and present. That could be a concept that is part of your devotion. It could also be a devotion on a larger level, for example, like the planet or compassion. It could also be devotion or thinking of connecting with the universe, the broader universe, the global community of humanity. Whatever that concept or whatever they bring to you, that would be part of spirituality. And the reason why I mention this is because there is a school of yoga called Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti is devotion. And the devotion of Bhakti takes many different forms. Bhakti comes from the Sanskrit root bhaj, which means to divide, share, or partake. And it implies a two-way sharing of love and affection between the devotee and the divine. It is not just an emotion. It is also considered to be an active, committed engagement. So bhakti is something that you do. You experience it, but you experience it through the act of doing. Bhakti yoga is considered one of the primary methods or yogas to achieve that spiritual realization of union with the divine. And to do that, you're going to use love and affection as an active bond that unites your consciousness with divine consciousness. And it is very accessible, and it also emphasizes simple actions like offering of an offering, like a flower, a cup of water, over more expensive rituals, over more specific rigid rituals. And you can find this devotion expressed a lot of times through singing or chanting or reciting hymns, something that you may experience if you ever watch videos like on YouTube of like kirtan. There are also seva, or performing acts of service as an offering to the god. And I'm talking about God here, but I think it's important to note that in Hindu philosophy, everything is an expression of Brahma, or the universal divine. And so even though there may be different deities, even though there may be different actions, it is all the universal divine spark, and your bhakti or your devotion or love also connects with the spark of divinity inside of you. So if we broaden our lens just a little bit, you know, one of the things that has really resonated with me is hearing that we are all the universe made flesh. We are the universe trying to figure itself out. And so it's doing that in human form. So if our devotion is to the universe or to the wider community of humanity, then that bhakti or that devotion could be to humanity in general, the spark of the universe that is inside all humans, the spark of the universe that unites all of us. And I think that's important to think about, because when we talk about when we talk about our nervous system regulation, the things that come along with that nervous system regulation is sometimes a lot of feelings that we're not worthy. We might feel that we're different from other humans, that we don't know how to human correctly, that we don't quite feel like we're, we're right. We feel like we're broken. We feel like we're wrong. And a lot of that has to do with the stories that we were told by other people trying to get us to conform to their ideas of what humanity should be like or what we should be like as far as somebody that's connected with their cultural beliefs and ideas. And so for me, when we start thinking about radical kindness or radical acceptance to ourselves, of ourselves, radical love to ourselves, to me, bhakti falls right in to that same line of thinking, that it is radical devotion to ourselves. Not in a way that places us above anybody else, not in a way that says that we're better than anybody else, but a radical devotion to ourselves, a radical love to ourselves, because we are just as worthy of devotion, or we are just as worthy of love as anybody else on this planet. It's the kind of thought process where if you get into that mindset where you feel like you're not worthy or you feel like you're not deserving of something, then you start to think, well, you know, if these other people are deserving of it, what do they have that I don't? And there may be material things or physical things that they have that you don't. But at the end of the day, as far as we know, you know, we're all human. you know, we're all human, and those physical things really have absolutely no bearing on our humanness or our worth and our deservingness of things that every human is deserving of. Human rights, housing, food, water, love, companionship, understanding, self-determination. I could go on. The list of things that we are all deserving of and that no one has a right to take away from anybody else is very long, and it is very egalitarian because we all have the same rights to those. And so to me, bhakti is a devotion or a love of self, because through that I am connecting with the part of me that is connected to the larger world, that's connected to the divine. The ecosystem inside my body that mirrors the ecosystem of this planet. And I actually have a podcast probably in a couple of weeks. I think I haven't looked at my schedule recently that will be talking a bit about that. The ways in that my wild nature, the parts of my brain that maybe aren't considered as civilized, like my amygdala, that you know, that lizard brain, science and psychology calls it the amygdala, the lizard brain, because it's very much fight, flight, freeze. But it also has those very primal urges. And no matter, you know, how fancy our clothes, no matter how civilized we think of ourselves, we all still have those primal urges. And what sets us apart is our relationship with our fellow beings on this planet and how we treat our fellow beings on this planet. So when we think about bhakti and devotion to nervous system regulation, I really think, for me, it's taking the scientific-minded, the prescription that I have spoken against, and I still do. I feel like we can't just prescribe yoga or prescribe meditation. While I can certainly tell you that they help, and the way that I approach them is different from just like writing a prescription for a medicine, I also think we are all different enough that it's very much not one size fits all. And I think one of the keys to finding a way of meditation that works for you is to be able to find a way to access or that makes that practice accessible to you, a way to make that practice work for you. And bhakti or devotion is one way to do that. So how does that look when we're talking about nervous system regulation? First of all, what is nervous system regulation? Well, there are probably as many different definitions of that as there are practitioners, and then you can probably double that number of definitions. For me, when my nervous system is regulated, it means that if I am triggered, so let me back up a bit. When I talk about nervous system regulation, I am not talking about never ever being triggered, never ever being depressed, never ever having an experience that is less than ideal. When I'm talking about nervous system regulation, I'm talking about being in tune with your body, in tune with your thoughts, in tune with what's going on in your mind. And this may be difficult, especially for my neurodivergent community, because one of the great stories, and great is in air quotes there, that we're told by the people around us when we're younger is that we can't trust what our own body is telling us. When our own mind and body and nervous system is telling us that something is too much and overwhelming, we're told we need to ignore that because of some random arbitrary reason. So one of the first acts of bhakti or devotion is simply listening to yourself and honoring what your body is telling you. Being curious. For me, curiosity goes hand in hand with devotion. Because when I am curious about something, I want to explore it. I want to learn more about it. I want to find out how it fits in my world or in my worldview and how I can connect with it. You know, it's like when you see a cat, maybe it's a stray cat, and you may crouch down and you'll hold out your hand and make the noise. You know, you're curious. You're like, who are you? You know, are you friendly? Would you like attention? What do you need? It's that sort of, I'd like to get to know you better, but I'd like to do that on your own terms, not rush over, pick you up and squeeze you in a big hug. That might be fun for you. Not so much fun for the stray cat. Likewise, for your nervous system is going to freak out if you do that. It is much easier to take a slow, cautious, curious, hey, okay, I'm feeling something. What am I feeling? What is coming up for me? Oh, I'm realizing I'm overwhelmed by this sensation in my body. I should probably quit ignoring that sensation, which for me recently was my chronic pain, and actually try to do something to help it and see if I can't bring my overwhelm levels down. And lo and behold, if I actually try to treat my pain instead of ignoring it, I can bring my overwhelm levels down. That's bhakti in action, devotion to yourself to regulate your nervous system. So when I talk about regulating the nervous system, I'm talking about being aware. So if you are triggered, because it's going to happen, it's not something we can avoid no matter how much you try. Especially if, like me, you're AUDHD, because the quiet calmness that soothes the autism kind of drives the ADHD part of your brain up the wall. So it's trying to find that happy medium, and sometimes you go too far in either direction. So when you have that regulated nervous system, you can recognize, oh, I just got triggered. Okay, what do I need right now? And if you don't know what you need right now, can I just sit with this feeling and explore it? Or can I just sit with this feeling and be curious about it? Okay, maybe I'll try some breathing exercises. You know, breathe in, breathe out. Okay, I'm feeling calmer now. That seems to work. Let's do that a little bit more. You know, I'm not I'm not talking about a strenuous, you know, like hot yoga practice. You know, oh, I've been sitting at the computer hyper-focusing for an hour working on something. Maybe I should move. So I'm going to get up. I'm going to stretch. I'm going to do a couple yoga poses. Okay, that felt good. Do I need to do some more? Am I ready to sit back down and work for another stretch? What do I need to do here? You know, I start my morning with a sun salutation with a small yoga practice because that kind of, that settles me after the nightmares I have in the evenings when I sleep. You know, okay, now I'm settled. Now I can face my day. That sort of thing. So when we start thinking about those practices, not as prescriptions, not as medicinal practices, but rather as care and devotion that we deserve and that we are entitled to, we can begin to combine bhakti or love or the spiritual, you know, the spiritual connection with something larger than ourselves with being in tune with our own body, with understanding that our body is made of star stuff. The same elements that are in the stars are in our bodies, are in our earth, is in everything around us. And so we have that larger connection. We have that connection with the wild earth, with the earth that we try to tame. You know, thunderstorms roll through. Well, if you think about your system, you know, storms roll through your body as well. That's what tears are. When you cry, that's an emotional release. You know, the emotions, the hormones, the cortisol, that all gets too much in the body. And for me, it comes out my eyes. And so I cry. You know, when the grief gets to be too heavy or too much, it builds up like energy in the atmosphere. And so if you start to connect those two things, you start to see that just like there is gentle waves as well as larger waves when there's storms, but there's always movement on this planet. There's always cycles. There's always times of rest followed by times of activity. And when you think about all of that and you make that connection, then incorporating those cycles, those movements, the periods of rest, the nervous system regulation into your own body, when you start to combine all of that, you really start to see that we are connected to something larger than ourselves. So I know I've been speaking very, very abstract. I've been speaking kind of in big sweeping generalizations here for this podcast. So I would like to just invite you to think about maybe not even something as strenuous as a full sun salutation or a full session of yoga. I'd like to invite you that when things start feeling overwhelming, when you start feeling like when you get that, you know, that drumbeat of too much, too much, too much in your brain, I want to invite you just to stop, take a deep breath, release that breath, and just bring your focus back to your body and back to your breath. That for a moment, you can set aside the too much, the to-do list, the everything you need to do, the people, the critters you need to take care of, the chores, the finances, the job, everything that this life throws at us. Set that aside for 30 seconds to a minute and just breathe and see how that feels. It might feel really good. It might feel really weird if you're not used to that kind of, okay, I need to take 30 seconds for me devotion. You might feel as if you're doing something wrong. You might feel as if you're going to get in trouble if you take time for yourself. Because again, that's another one of those stories that kind of gets, you know, pushed into our psyches. Whatever you're feeling after that 30 seconds is perfectly normal, and I don't want you to give up on it. If your brain tells you, oh, I took 30 seconds, I'm going to get in trouble, I invite you to be curious. Will I? does something come up in the next hour, in the next 30 minutes, in the next 10 minutes that would make you think that you're getting in trouble? Now, if you're at a work environment and you take 30 seconds to breathe and somebody says something to you, I want to tell you that, you know, that very clearly is not a healthy, that is a toxic work environment. Unfortunately, too many of our work environments are toxic, but I want to reassure you that if that happens, that's not your fault. If you need to take 30 seconds to breathe and you're in an environment that doesn't allow you 30 seconds to breathe, that's not a good environment to be in. That's an environment that thrives off of making you feel bad. And I would encourage you to think about what you might need to do to change that. I understand that not everybody can. I understand that there are times when you just have to, you know, be where you are and make the best of it. And so what I might encourage you to do is, if you get home, take that time to breathe when you get home, when you're alone. Just check in with yourself periodically over the next week. What can I do to support myself? What do I need right now? How can I help myself feel more regulated? That is bhakti. That is a true act of devotion. That is an act of love. And that is an act of love that has ripples across everything that you do. And it has ripples even outside of yourself. So I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation. I hope that it has sparked food for thought. And I look forward to the next episode of Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show. Please take a moment to like and subscribe. And if this resonated with you, leave a comment. I love to hear from my listeners. Thank you. You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kelstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. As a wild spirit storyteller, Kit is passionate about helping those who are neurodivergent, disabled, or living with chronic illness rediscover their own inner wild spirit. Visit feathermanesoul.com to receive free gifts or book a free call with Kit to discuss how wild spirit storytelling can help you. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting feathermanesoul.com/show and following the links to the Muse Charmer Network. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow wherever you're hearing my voice, or tell a friend who may be interested. Thank you.